This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Recently here on Drive, we interviewed three members of the 78ers, the original people who marched in the first Mardi Gras, which ended up with the police beating many of those who were arrested. It was a touching and emotional chat and a reminder that you only have to scratch the surface and there is a deep mistrust of police by the LGBTIQ+ community and recent events in Sydney, resulting in the charging of a police officer with the murders of a Sydney gay couple, have further eroded trust and resulted in anger towards the police force. So, should the police be marching in parades such as Mardi Gras or Pride March? And what needs to be done to build trust in our police forces? Justin Ellis is a lecturer in criminology at the University of Newcastle. Justin, it's good to have you back on Drive.
Thanks, Warren.
Despite, homosexuality was decriminalised many years ago, you do only have to scratch the surface with events that happened like last week in Sydney. Why is this ongoing mistrust of the police force still continuing?
Well, Warren, it's a good question because I think that with the police in started marching in the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Parade in 1998, and glossy images in recent years of the New South Wales Police Force marching in uniform with their Progress Pride flags, with the police commissioner or not, depending on the year and availability, it sends a message that all is okay with LGBTQ. people and in this case, the New South Wales Police Force. Now, in recent years, there have been a range of issues with policing of Mardi Gras in particular, and those issues have come closer to the surface, obviously, with the murders of Luke Davies and Jesse Baird by a New South Wales police officer has been charged with those murders. And so it was interesting that the police marching in Mardi Gras became this topic and focus of what was going on. I think the short answer is that it's going to depend on where you are, what the structure of your organisation is. So, for example, the Mardi Gras is a membership organisation, and the almost two-thirds of the Mardi Gras membership voted in at the end of 2023 to withdraw from a memorandum of understanding, for example, with the New South Wales Police Force. And I think that You mentioned that you'd interviewed 78ers recently or before on Joy, and that was a very moving and touching interview, I'm sure. But also some of those people have been the most vocal critics of the police not marching in the parade. So there's a range of perspectives on this.
I remember asking one of them, saying, how do you reconcile when you think of all the violence that you experience with seeing police marching today? And she said, well, those weren't the police that were there then. And she said, we just have to move on from it. But something, you mentioned in a conversation article that in 2013 we saw excessive police force at the Mardi Gras. And let's be honest, and I've got to be honest here, as a gay male growing up in this country, I mean, it's a bit of a straight boys club. And if you're any different, then you're more than likely going to be a target of bullying. Once you give these people power, do they just perpetuate this bullying in a professional capacity? Is that what's going on here?
Well, I think that most police officers don't use excessive force, but there is, there's research that shows that some that do might be repeat offenders. We saw with the case of police excessive force that was filmed and went viral on YouTube in 2013 that police officer at that time was also before the New South Wales Police Integrity Commission on another case of alleged police excessive force that had also been filmed. So what you have at Mardi Gras is you have this confluence of police forces across New South Wales who are rostered on or volunteer to work at Mardi Gras, and you've got really a clash of cultures within those police themselves. Surrey Hills duty officers, inner city duty officers who tend to be on board, they might be GLOWs, they might have had gay and lesbian liaison officer training, but we have this clash of police cultures, right? So that's going to generate friction at events like that, particularly where you've got people from LGAs who might more readily use of force to solve their problems.
How do we therefore address that clash of police cultures?
Well, it sounds training, but then, you know, it often reverts back to training. That's one dimension. But we know that with police training, for example, and I've come across this recently with cultural bias training, that, you know, you might get a 2-hour slot annually to educate police on certain issues. That's not enough, and it's not frequent enough. It's also not going to necessarily tease out people who may have a bias or a prejudice, and you need to address those problems. So I think that's part of the cultural problem. But in that article in the conversation, I've also pointed out that we have aggressive policing and practices that are not necessarily lawful or useful in the continued use of drug detection dogs at Mardi Gras, for example, and at music festivals throughout New South Wales. We've got plenty of evidence from the New South Wales Ombudsman in 2006, a coroner inquiry into 6 deaths at music festivals in 2019 from the New South Wales coroner, who recommended that police drug detection dogs be banned at music festivals because they cause, among other things, panic ingestion. So, yes, we've got education, but we've also got police practices that are dangerous, potentially unlawful, and need to be stopped at these festivals that are celebrations, not protests.
Have the police forces, I suppose, across the country taken historic wrongs seriously and addressed them appropriately, do you think?
This is Warren, I can't speak for all the jurisdictions across Australia. One thing that I'd like to foreground, though, before I get to responding to this point, is that homosexuality was decriminalised in New South Wales in 1984. It wasn't decriminalised in Tasmania until 1997. Mm. That took approximately 22 years. What we're living with are the residues of criminalisation. So gay and lesbian people, LGBTQ people, continue to be targeted for mis and disinformation. And we've seen a rise of this in 2023 when I also spoke to Joy about, you know, targeting of drag queen story time. We've also got ongoing issues with conversion practices that can often have tragic consequences. Bullying, we see suicides in relation to bullying. So the legacy of criminalisation has a very, very long tail. And across the country, just because a jurisdiction may have decriminalised homosexuality like New South Wales in 1984, we saw with the recent SACCA inquiry into gay hate, LGBTIQ hate crimes between 1970 and 2010, that many of those cases were not properly investigated after the decriminalisation of homosexuality. So clearly we've got an issue here with that ongoing stigma, and then that's perpetuated through police not necessarily, you know, this SACCA said in polite terms that the police could have been more cooperative with that inquiry, and it was the last-ditched attempt to get people to come forward because those people are old and frail and there won't be many of them left. So I think on some levels serious, yes. On other levels, well, read the findings from the SACCA inquiry. They'll tell you what a special commission thinks.
We're chatting with Justin Ellis, lecturer in criminology at the University of Newcastle, about the appropriateness of police marching in the Mardi Gras parade. Justin, how important is it to the police themselves to be seen marching in parades such as Mardi Gras?
This is an important question, Warren, because we've got a range of stakeholders here who were weighing in on whether it was appropriate or not for the police to march in the Mardi Gras parade in 2024, given what had happened. So I think that anecdotally that the GLOWs were disappointed that they may not be able to march because they invest in building relationships with the LGBTQ community. So I think that there are a range of police perspectives. The police did end up marching in the parade, even though they weren't meant to be marching in uniform. But from what I could see, I went to the parade and you had what looked like riot squad police officers in their blue jumpsuits surrounding the GLOWs and the police commissioner and whomever else was inside that sort of riot order squad framing. And then you had a black car behind them as a part of a security detail. So I think that even though the police did march, the message that they were sending was ambiguous to me. I don't know what the reasoning was behind the way it was constructed, but it showed force, or it showed presence.
And distrust.
Well, yes, on a whole range of levels. So I think we need to unpack that. I don't have enough information to make a judgment call on what the reasoning was behind that particular way in which that was framed. But I think that with the marching, what I would ask, or what I argue, would be that it is okay to demand more of our police services, given some of the limitations we're seeing. We're seeing public perceptions of police integrity at 10-year lows across all Australian jurisdictions. It's not just New South Wales. So there's some things need to change, and I think demonstrably so, to improve trust and confidence. This is with the general population, not with queer populations that have had discriminatory policing practices targeted against them. So I think the symbolism of marching in the parade is very important to the New South Wales Police Force in particular, but more needs to be done to address some of the issues.
How far do, I suppose, apologies go to fixing the mistrust? Are they sort of similar to the glossy brochure of the marching in the parades as well?
Well, I think apologies have an important place in recognising past wrongs, but they're only as good as the substance that backs them up. And with what you've got here, I think it's interesting, in real time, you've got the SACCA inquiry, the Special Commission of Inquiry into LGBTIQ hate crimes in New South Wales between 1970 and 2010. And if listeners don't know about that inquiry, that was examining cases that police had investigated between 1970 and 2010 for bias and the police handling of those cases. So SACCA hands down his recommendations at around like the 21st of December. We speed dial to early March 2024, and on that Sunday, just before Mardi Gras, I think we've got Karen Webb apologising, and this is why while Jesse Baird and Luke Davies are still missing, we've got Karen Webb making an apology through an exclusive to the Sunday Telegraph. Mm. No victims' families, no victims involved in that potential cathartic process. So I think when apologies are delivered, and if they're not is significant, and then if they're not followed up with substantive action, then, we could rightly say, well, how serious are they?
Justin, really good to chat with you. Thanks for joining us on Drive today.
Thanks, Warren.
That is Justin Ellis, lecturer in criminology at the University of Newcastle.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.